Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Leslie Arnold hosting ACATA, the Ancient Science of Sahaji. It is Saturday evening, January 23rd, 2016, 6:30 p.m. on the East Coast of America. Welcome, everyone, to the show tonight, and especially those who are snowed in on the East Coast, of which there are many, I'm sure. But we're happy to have you with us this evening, and I'd like to give an especially warm welcome to the leader of this teaching, who is Sri Kadavji, the Mahaji, the 973rd Living Sarosha Master. Sri Kadavji, welcome to the show this evening, and how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and how are you, Leslie?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks very much. And for those people who haven't listened before, what we're going to do during this show is talk about some of the basic fundamentals of this teaching as well. Sri Kadavji will go into some further aspects that are a little more esoteric. And we will discuss many, many different issues. The shows are not the same. Even though we try to cover some of the fundamentals each time, they seem to cover many different issues as well. So with that, Sri Kadavji, perhaps, I know we started very many different points when we begin the show, wherein sometimes we go into the history, sometimes we go into the goals of ACATA, and I was wondering if you might explain what your title means, the Mahaji, the 973rd Living Sarosha Master.
Right. Well, it's a real mouthful title, that's for sure. At the same time, it's a very long lineage. It goes back to pretty much the dawn of time. The number 973 comes from 3100 BC on October 22nd at midnight, when the first living Sarosha Master was Rama, that came out of the Persian jungle in ancient time. And there's been a lot of Ramas, but this particular one was the first teacher in this lineage that we're talking about. But before that was the beginning of what is called the Iron Age or the Kali Yuga presently, and that was the beginning of this era. But the living Sarosha Master has always existed in history, and some of them are very ancient and very old that still live today in what is known as the Khatsapuri Monastery in northern Tibet. Now, prior to that time, we just called them the superannuated. They're a part of this ancient order of the Viragi that, like I said, goes back into the misty dawns of time. Now, the high teaching is not always public, and it's sort of a rarity sometimes, because it's not always for all people. It's only for a certain percentage of people during a certain era. But now we have 1 in 100, it's like 1% of the population that we consider ready souls. So those ready souls would be able to hear what we have to say and can feel the essence of what we call the Sarosha, the sound and light, the sound current that we can hear with the inner ear. And then when they hear that, the words of the teacher are... they can comprehend it. They can comprehend the simplicity of what we're trying to say here in reference to this lineage of masters that often teaches public, but then more often teaches in a non-public reference, but always exists. He's always there, and it's always the first representative of God, but not God, and not a messiah or a savior, any of this stuff. But it's a temporary titular level that has to exist because there has to be a direct way to achieve the Godhead in a lifetime. And that's really the long and the short of the lineage. But the key part of it is that it's temporary. It doesn't go on forever, so it's not like a perpetual hero or some sort of sociopath that's there to try to control everything. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with perpetuating a path that will enable people to get back to spiritual liberation. Because that's what the problem is, that we have these lower seas or bodies that are around the essence of soul. We call it the lower planes. We have the physical, astral, causal, and mental planes. that are around this essence of soul, which would be the fifth dimension, and not the singing group either. That little joke there, right? Excuse me.
Except that's probably a reach for many of the listeners who are over 50, I'm guessing.
I see. A certain age, right? The fifth dimension, right? In our, what was that balloon song? Yeah. And right. Beautiful balloon, right? But anyway, back on the point. The fifth level is the first plane of spiritual liberation, which we call self-realization. And once one gains the identity as soul, it's a great spiritual revelation, also a liberation. It would be, in the religions we call it a religious experience, but we don't, ACAT is not a religion. The definitions we use for the short one, as you can see on the website, is the ancient science of Sahaji. And Sahaji just means soul motion, movement, travel on the inside, the movement of spirit that we are when we close our eyes. We're in a spiral as is. We're spinning. The energy is always spinning. But so we become aware of that. We become aware of the motion of soul within. And that would be called the higher Sanskrit word Sahaji. And the reason why we use those terms is that it's a higher feeling or vibration that soul is attuned to. It's attuned to that spiritual vibration, always has been attuned to it. And again, those that are ready can hear what we have to say, and it's not a riddle to them. It's not a misunderstanding or a repellent language. Like some people are repelled by it because they don't comprehend and their attention level is very poorly. So we have to understand that the ready soul is somebody that is focused and can understand the simplicity of being able to be liberated in spirit. I mean, that's what people are seeking anyway, but most aren't going to get it in this lifetime because it's not for everybody. It never was for everybody, because the lower planes established by the Supreme Deity were a place to go into and to try to get out of by way of a way to do it. It's kind of a secret way. And my teacher, Paul Twitchell, wrote some discourses called The Secret Way. Now, the irony of that is that even when we're public, if only one out of 100 can get it, it remains secret to the 99, even if it's public. In other words, you can't get it, so it still remains a secret. It's not like a hidden thing that we expose and everybody gets. It's still a secret, which I think is kind of funny, right, Leslie, in terms of it's still secret, albeit we're public in the past 26 years. I think you would agree with that.
Sure. Yeah. That's obviously, that's because we're in the Iron Age, and as you just mentioned, only 1 in 100 people are ready. So it is going to be secret to the majority of the people, and even the ones that are ready, most of them have still not come to the path yet. Because what is our membership right now? Around 2,000 people.
Something like that. Between 2,000 and 3,000. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that, right. Therefore, there's still a lot of people that are already souls, but that just haven't found the path, the teaching at this point.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's right. So that there would be like 75 million in the 7.5 billion in the Earth region presently. But, and then people say, well, that's very ambitious of you to try to get 75 million people. Well, I'm not trying to do anything other than we're presenting the message, and we don't. There's nothing that is we're selling. We're not pitchmen or salesmen. And so everything's free. The books are free. Seminars are free. Everything we do is, it doesn't cost anything. Membership is free. So that whole thought of us trying to make money from this has nothing to do with it at all. So that's a very good thing, because there's no thought in that realm of, oh, they're just trying to sell something. So we're not doing that. It's free for everybody. And again, it's a matter of trying to find the ready soul that wants spiritual liberation in this lifetime. And then that sort of, once one steps onto the path, a very important part of it is that we believe in karma and reincarnation. But when one steps onto the path, and the reason why membership is important is because one's karma is ended at that point, and they start working off their past karma. So in other words, it ended, E-N-D-E-E-D, ended. And then there's no more that's made after that. And then they're living in a dharma state, D-H-A-R-M-A, a dharma life, which means the karmaless life. Now, I challenge people, just go elsewhere and hear, see if somebody has that same rhetoric or concept. They don't have it. They don't understand what dharma is. In the East, they talk about dharma as being the righteous life, but in reality, it's living the non-karma state. And so that means that that's why the membership is important, to work off one's karma and then gain spiritual liberation in the fifth plane. They get control of the incarnations. That's really what all that political control and all that stuff that people talk about is really about, getting in balance with one's own state of consciousness that we do have. We have a knowingness within us, but there's very few people that target that knowingness and touch people in that arena of the state of being aware. See, and that's the interesting part that we talk about. And even when people are listening to us that may not be ready, they still get it at that point in time. But then they leave the room and go out the door, and it all goes back to the way it was before. They reject the truth because they're still inundated with the falsehood. And that's all right. Like I said, we're not appealing to everybody, and that was the idea in the beginning when it is public, is we're just presenting the information, and for those that can hear, have the ears to hear and the eyes to see, nothing is a riddle. But again, to the other ones, it is a riddle, and that's all right. We say, fine, whatever you need to do is great, but we don't get into arguments with people, because there's really nothing to argue about, because other teachings have their place. So we consider it stepping stones to the high level, or to the middle path, if you will. I mean, Buddha talked about the middle path, and the middle path was what he was doing in the statues where it shows him meditating. In reality, he was contemplating. And Leslie, maybe you'd like to talk about contemplation, because I know that's near and dear to your heart. And if you would like to do that, I appreciate it. Thank you. And then take us through a huge chat, if you'd do that, please.
Sure, I'd love to. The contemplation really is the crux of the teaching, because the only way one really gains spiritual unfoldment is by contacting the Sarosha, which is seen as light and heard as sound, the spirit that flows from the Godhead. And we use the term Akshar in Akata for the Godhead. So Sarosha flows from the Godhead, and we want to make contact with that as much as possible. So consciously, every day, it's not to say that we don't or we aren't in contact with it at other times, but consciously for 30 minutes a day, we perform what's called the contemplation exercise. So when someone there's a lot of static. I don't know if that's coming from your end, Srikadavji.
I think it stopped. Okay. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, it stopped. Okay. So at any rate, what we do, this contemplation technique, when someone's sitting in contemplation, you would think they're in meditation. There's a little bit of difference between contemplation and meditation, because meditation, the purpose of meditation is really to block everything out. And then the meditator uses one of the terms from the planes in either the astral or causal or mental world. So they never really get beyond that point. They never get into the what we call the higher, pure, positive planes of spirit, where one can achieve the three goals of Akata: self-realization, God-realization, and spiritual mastery. It does meditation, sure, it provides balance and some tranquility, but if somebody's really seeking spiritual unfoldment and to facilitating that, then contemplation is the means to that end. So in contemplation, what we're going to do is we sit quietly, as quiet a place as you can find in your home, and use earplugs if necessary, if there's any extraneous noise coming from traffic or refrigerators or whatever. And We just want to sit quietly. We can sit in lotus position or tailor fashion. It doesn't have to be lotus style, or we can have our feet flat on the floor. But we just
want
to be
I
comfortable
want to
and
ask
easy.
In other words, you
Yes.
don't want to contemplate in the kitchen, right? With the refrigerator. I couldn't
Not
resist
unless
that,
you
I'm sorry.
don't. Not unless you don't have a refrigerator in the kitchen. So I don't know if too many people don't have refrigerators, but there might be. Who knows? anyway. So we're going to sit quietly and in a quiet place. Sit quietly in a quiet place. So I think I've said the word quiet a few times now. I've gotten that point across. But what we're going to do is take a deep breath. You take a few deep breaths, and when one is in contemplation, you put your attention on the spot between the eyebrows, also known as the third eye, also called the Tisratil. That's one of the higher chakras. Or you can put your attention on the highest of the chakras, the crown chakra, which is that that spot on the top of the head that was a soft spot when a baby is born. It's a soft spot, and really that's where soul comes into the body, when soul enters the body, when they first come into the physical life and during this lifetime. So the reason we contemplate for 30 minutes, I just want to mention, is that 30 minutes is extremely important, that it actually covers a 24-hour span. So if we're contemplating approximately the same time daily, it's giving us balance and protection and centering us during that 24-hour period. And it's very strategic that we try to do the contemplation at the same time. The choice of time of day is totally up to the individual. I perform mine in the morning when I first get up, because it really sets the note of the day and makes me feel great. And I don't like to use the term blissful, but it brings happiness and joy to do it, because it is a very calming and centering thing. So there's different experiences that one can experience during the contemplation. Now, you might hear the sound current, which can be often heard as a high electrical pitch type of sound. It can also be heard as various sounds depending on what plane one might be traveling on. If you're doing Sahaja, or what's also known as soul travel, the inner travel. So there are different sounds which might let you know what plane you're on. You might hear a buzzing of bees, or you might hear a single note of a flute, which is the sound on the soul plane. You might hear violins. There are various sounds, or you might hear the high-pitched electrical sound, which is just fine, and what people often do hear. But there is a variety to this. As well, you may see a light, and it could be one of the lights from any of the planes, because there are different colors that are associated with the inner plane. So, for example, I was talking to a student a few weeks ago, and she was saying that she had been seeing a lot of orange light and a lot of purple light when she was doing her contemplations. Well, the orange light is actually seen on what's called the causal plane, which is where the Akashic records are stored, and so she would know that she was traveling on that plane. The violet-colored light is the top of the mental plane. This is also known as the etheric plane, and it's just before one gets into the higher worlds, where one starts to see yellow light and white light. And so any of those lights are fine. The colors of light might be fine, and you also might see a very blue, like almost purple, it's like a deep royal blue light, and that's the light of the inner master, the Mahaji, and that means he's with you. He's there to guide you if you'd like to guide him, and he's giving you his protection and love. So I just wanted to mention that. The other thing is, you might have a very vivid out-of-body experience, where you're traveling on, you're very aware of the traveling. You're always in Sahaji, but you can also, as long as you're closing your eyes, but to be aware of a very vivid experience is where you're traveling on the inner planes. You might be joining a satsang on one of the temples of golden wisdom on the inner planes. There are many different experiences that can be enjoyed. All of these are fine. Everything is valid. So we just want to let everything flow, put our attention on either the Tisrachal or the crown chakra, and we can chant the word Hu. And Hu is a very, very high vibrational word that also means God. But the main purpose of using Hu is that it can really obliterate any kind of negativity that's in the area, whether it's on the inner or the outer. So Hu is very, very potent to use, and it's important to use. And those people that do step onto the path will get their own mantras that they can use as well. So with all that, I'm going to take you through just a really brief, what we call a Hu chant, just to get the feel of it. You can just follow along with me if you like, or just listen, whatever's comfortable for you, but just be seated comfortably, close your eyes, take a deep breath or two to relax, put your attention either on the third eye or the crown chakra, and then it's going to sound like this. May the blessings be. And that's just an example of how one would start a contemplation. And if you're interested in finding out more of the contemplations, on our website, akatak.com, in the introductory book, which you can download for free, there in Chapter 3, there are a few different contemplation exercises that you can try out and see whichever one suits you. Ricardo, is there anything you'd like to add to what I've said
at this point? Yeah, thank you for taking us through the contemplation exercise. It's always very comfortable to do, so it's a peaceful experience and something to look forward to each day. It's really the only practice that we recommend because the idea is to get in contact with that sound current, to be able to hear the sound current, because that sound current is the eternal soul within us that we experience. In other words, we just don't talk about it, but we can actually have the experience of it, which is extremely important. And that's the eternal essence that we've always been and will always be in reference to that. So we say that it's a twin aspect of the sound is a light heard, and the light is a sound seen. So when you talk about the light in other scriptures, they really are just seeing the sound in terms of that. So the twin aspect of the sound and light are what we call the Sarosha. If you look at the term Sraosha, you have that twin aspect. You have the Sra in Higher Sanskrit, which means sound, and you have Sha, which means light in Sanskrit as well. And that means you have in the word, you have sound and light. And then you have the O in the middle, which is the soul plane. Because if you look at the stylized Rosha, it looks like the top of a funnel or a circular spiral, because the word spiral is a derivative of the word spirit, and spirit is derivative of the word Sarosha. And then the Sarosha has the planes, and then also we alluded to the planes and mentioned them previously. We have the physical, astral, causal, and mental plane, which are the four lower planes, which are within that logo or symbol. So it's all incorporated into that symbol, which I found to be a tremendous mystery of the Sarosha symbol. Leslie had mentioned the temples of golden wisdom on each one of those planes, and it's really the central place to go to in these imagery worlds called the Temple of Golden Wisdom. And then and when you go in the doors, at the keystone above the doors, usually there are these twin doors that you go into, they'll have this Rosh symbol in the right in the keystone in different, even in wood and some of them in some sorts of stone and what have you. But years ago when I had the experience of seeing this Rosh symbol, and the path was different, at that time it was Ekankar, and they had the symbol EK, which was never on the inner planes. I mean, it was kind of ironic. I would see this Rosh symbol and thought, well, I don't know what that means. And then the people on the inner planes would always change the terms to Rosh instead of the words that I was using at the time. So I always thought that was rather interesting. But the verification of these things, as I said before, is one's own experience. I mean, we can talk about this stuff all day long, but until one validates it themselves by having inner experiences or having lucid sahaji experiences, out-of-body experiences that people have all the time, and then when they come to the path, they have people that verify or are sympathetic about it or not condemning people or being outlandish or something fantastic or fantasy, that type of thing. Because my teacher used to say that fantasy is cast out of the cloth of God. So there isn't really anything, as you were saying earlier, Leslie, about everybody's experiences are valid, but they need to go to people that are acknowledging it and recognizing it and sympathetic to people's experiences instead of condemning or being in the adversarial role that seems so much in the lower planes. And that becomes the issue. That when people step onto the path, since we are of good cheer, we have a lot of fun, and we kiddingly say, ironically, that ESP means extremely silly people, but that's kind of a joke that I made up several years ago. A friend of mine, we were having some fun and laughing at a get-together, and he came up behind us and said, "You're extremely silly people." I said, "ESP." I knew that was the better definition for it. So that's a lot of fun in itself, because you have to have a sense of humor to take things lightly, and we always kiddingly say that a good friend of mine and a very dear friend of mine was telling me about one of his mentors said to him about serious disease, right? The people that have serious disease, OSD, right? So we have a lot of fun, and we don't condemn laughter, and there are some teachings that actually do that. I was so amazed to hear that. But we're not in a competitive mode with teachings, quite the contrary. I think all things that are positive should be elevated and looked towards instead of the negatives. So I think we do that on the path of Akasha, that the strong points are things that are very good with people we want to elevate. I think that's really important. As I said before, that it's a matter of getting the fundamentals, of knowing that the essence of what an individual is sound current. It has a name. Kadapji is a sobriquet for Turkata for Za, which is my spiritual name, that is really my sound current that you can see in front of you, that you see it as letters eventually once you're on the path for a while, because everyone has a perpetual name that is theirs, that it's great that parents give a name, but they really aren't in tune a lot of times with the spiritual name. That's rather more of an esoteric type thing that isn't really fundamental necessarily, but is coming out tonight in the show. But once you're on the path for a while, usually you'll find your spiritual name in a short period of time. Leslie mentioned mantras that are used to chant so you attune yourself to the sound current. Sometimes people don't hear the sound right away. Others find that they've heard it for a long time. Are we getting down to the last few minutes?
Yes. Okay, yeah, we've got about 45 seconds left. So I do want to thank everyone for being with us this evening and invite you back to listen to the show next week as well. And please feel free to listen to any of the shows in the archives. There's hundreds of them that you can listen to. And I do want to hand this over to you, Srikadavji, to give you an opportunity to say good night.
Well, with the right hand held out towards you, I am always with you. May the blessings be. Baraka B'Shach.